Blue Kool-Aid drinkers, Big Z here, 41-33. Brutal. Brutal. Oh, man. You know, the Lions did just enough at the end of the game to give us some hope, and then, just couldn't quite finish. But some positives to take out of this game. So we'll be talking about all that on the podcast. And I do apologize for my audio in this one, having some connectivity issues. So I had to record through the phone rather than on my microphone. For the intro, I could do it, but then over the chat, we cannot do it. But so just please note that. But man, 41-33, a lot to talk about after week one here. Lions still tied for first place. So sit back, relax, grab your Kool-Aid. It's time for the pod. This is Drinking the Blue Kool-Aid. We're lifelong Lions fans. Bob!
All right, let's go, Lions fans. The Jared Goff era has begun.
Connor!
Hey, let's bite some kneecaps. Detroit versus everybody, baby.
UJ!
A new era in Detroit has begun, people. So get on the train or get left behind.
Rud Dog!
This is going to be an unprecedented era of Detroit Lions respect.
And I'm Big Z. It's a new era of Detroit Lions football. It's going to be one hell of a season. We'll be drinking the blue Kool-Aid with Dan Campbell all year long. Predictions, thoughts, reactions, everything we got to hear. Sit back, relax, and grab your Kool-Aid, fans. Blue Kool-Aid drinkers, we are back, and oh boy, week one of the NFL season has wrapped up. We're recording this the day after the crazy 41-33 loss to the San Francisco 49ers. So the Lions moved to 0-1, but guess what? Everybody else in the NFC North is 0-1. So the Lions are tied for first after week one of the NFL season. But before we get into all that, we have a lot to talk about, that's for sure, is the Blue Kool-Aid crew. Let's get to them. So Rud Dog.
Yo.
Connor.
Hey, hey.
Bob.
Hello.
And UJ.
Hey, everybody.
All right, gentlemen. So let's get into this game. 41-33. It was 41-10. The Lions make a massive comeback in the fourth quarter. But before we get into all that, the news of today is heartbreaking. Heartbreaking.
It is.
Jeff Okuda out with a torn Achilles.
Ugh. Terrible.
Absolutely. Yeah. Brutal. This is an injury. The last major torn Achilles I can remember for the Lions, at least, was Mecole Shore, the second-round running back. And he looked pretty explosive, and then he had the injury, never was the same again. This is way harder than an ACL, especially the stop-and-go that a cornerback needs to have that type of agility. Achilles is probably the most important or the worst injury they could have besides, like, I think Bob texted, like, breaking your back or neck, obviously. But yeah. As far as the leg goes.
Though Stafford proved that's not necessarily the worst.
Yeah. But a torn Achilles is really, really tough to come back from for a cornerback. And his career is way over. It might be over. I don't know. I hope not. But
Ryan Broyles was the other one, Big Z. Ryan
he tears Brooks Achilles up.
The same, yeah,
I know he tore Achilles his ACL guy. Three times.
I saw some people on Twitter were talking about maybe converting him to a safety when he comes back if he doesn't have that same pop because he can be a little slower. But it's all speculation at this point.
He's got a long road ahead of him, that's for sure.
Yeah, we need to see more about his recovery first.
Yeah, the most recent kind of successful comeback from an Achilles from this position is Richard Sherman. He tore his Achilles, and he's still been a viable cornerback in the NFL. Not as elite as he was before, but he still was able to come back and produce at the NFL level. Now, Okuda has not shown the Richard Sherman type ability in the NFL yet, and he had a rough game before the injury in this one. But there were signs in the preseason that
he did have a nice diving pass breakup, though.
Yeah, he did have that.
Yeah.
The rest was not good, though, including on that run on the outside for Mitchell, the long touchdown run. He got wiped out completely, and that was on him to keep the contain. So that it was not a great game for Okuda, but we don't have to get into that too much just because of his injury. So we're not going to see him the rest of the year. Now, who takes over for him will be interesting. It looks like Ify and Philip Onwu
is going to be stepping up, and or maybe we sign some veteran, like maybe Mike. I don't think Mike Ford got signed anywhere, so he might still be available.
Maybe Quinn Dunbar.
In. Campbell said they're going to sign someone pretty fast. I think so. I'll look.
Oh yeah, they're going to have to.
But Monday for sure, I think it would be him starting.
At this stage of the season, I don't know that anyone you sign is going to be like a guaranteed walk-on starter. So
it's not going to matter because Aaron Rodgers is bad now. If you watched that last
Yeah.
We can start anyone back there, and it's going to be okay.
Did you guys see that PFF tweeted that if you throw the ball into the dirt every time as a quarterback, your PFF score would be like 36.2, and his was 23.8.
Oh my God.
That's gotta be the lowest of his career, right? I would assume.
Gotta be.
So that really makes me excited going into Monday Night Football next week that Aaron Rodgers is, he looks like he's still stuck in Hawaiian time zone right now.
Don't worry, we'll get his best game next week.
He's got Jeopardy on his mind. We just gotta focus on that.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, in the past, at least in the Patricia era, the best recipe for an ailing offense was to play the Lions defense. So I hope that trend does not continue going forward. But let's talk about the defense in this game.
Not good.
Oh, boy. They made some adjustments in the second half, thank God. But the first half was a nightmare.
It was bad.
It was a nightmare.
Yeah.
We didn't see a lot of Derek Barnes in this game. He only played – six snaps
in the second half too. If I'm not
mistaken, didn't he get hurt on a snap at one point? Or
Barnes?
Was that Barnes? I might be confusing players. I thought he was down for a bit on a snap.
Not to my knowledge.
Yeah, I don't know about that either.
Never mind then. Strike that from the record.
But Anzalone played the whole game. Rockers didn't look great. The D line as a whole, honestly, did not play up to what we were expecting. There was limited pass rush, but that was mainly
what were you expecting?
They were getting torched on the run.
Yeah.
What were you expecting? You're expecting great play from them? I think our defensive line was like a weak spot on this team.
Hey, the important thing was
really? our preview.
I think they were weak, but not 41 points weak is this point.
No, we're looking at where we could improve, but we're improving from like a hot pile of garbage. I mean, you're not talking about some elite line that's not performing. I mean, maybe a few years ago we had a line that we thought was stacked and they turned out to be no good, but I don't think this year people are expecting that. At least,
did you expect them to be this bad?
No, I don't think anyone did.
I honestly don't think it was all the D line as much as it was the linebacker play.
Pass rush in the secondary was gone.
I was more upset by the coaching in the first half on the defense because it seemed like players were way out of position.
Yeah,
front seven not knowing their assignments yet and getting washed out of plays too easily.
I think Aaron Glenn had a terrible game because, like, Connor and I were watching. It was just pass after pass. They were calling the exact right offense for our defense, like multiple plays in a row. True. Like, I think he's learning on the job too here. I mean, for this team at least.
And you guys are being really hard on the first game of the season on this.
We'll say, though.
Jeez.
Take it easy, man. I will say this is the first game I've seen us adjust at halftime.
Exactly.
That's what
I was going to say. Kyle.
And I thought the defense was okay the second half. They were okay.
I guess the Patricia era is the other way around. We started off good and then would not
exactly.
Adjust.
I prefer this to that all day.
Can we just combine the two?
Yeah. Well, that's what we're trying to figure out. Right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's easy to forget that this is a whole new scheme. So even our best veteran players have no established understanding of this scheme. They all are working from day. This is all new for everybody. So, I mean, it's not surprising that early on, especially in the first half of the first game of the season, that guys were out of position. Guys were getting, out leveraged and not knowing exactly where they needed to be in all their cues. So, I mean, I found the adjustments in the second half rather encouraging considering where we were starting from.
Yeah. And I thought this game, I wasn't expecting a whole lot out of this team. So it wasn't like upsetting that we give up so many points. It was kind of a growth process that they're going to have to go through. And I think I like the coaching staff. I think they're going to actually get better this year and win some games, but it's a rough time out of the gates. Everyone's new. It's all excitement. And, they'll find their place.
Yeah.
We almost tied
it against the Niners.
You think about it that way?
Not a bad week one.
These coaches are making them accountable, though. I mean, you saw Okuda getting reamed out on the sideline. I mean, they're holding these guys accountable. They're going to make them do it, you know, and that goes around too. The team sees that and they want to play better. Believe me, they don't want to get that happen to them.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
You know, who do you guys think our top rated defensive player was this game? If you had to take a guess.
Trey Flowers
is actually one of the higher rated defensive players in the league. In this
that's
game.
Like his standard. He's like that guy you don't notice on the field for most of the game, but his ratings are always just solid.
He plays well, and they dropped him back. And they dropped him back on third down, and then he forces the fumble. That was awesome. Chance at the end of the game. Great so play. He definitely stepped up there. And a guy I wanted to point out as well, just if we're trying to find some positives, is AJ Parker. The guy played 21 snaps, 11 in coverage, and didn't have the ball thrown to him once, which means he was doing his job most likely in that mm-hmm. case. And this is a guy that we saw a lot in the preseason, undrafted rookie, and played good in the slot.
It at least means that, you know, he looked better than Owarie and Okuda.
Yeah,
because he wasn't presenting the targets they were.
Well, Okuda wasn't really targeted that much, I don't think. But he did give up that horrible long touchdown pass.
That was a tough play. Like it was just one of those ones where he was trying so hard, and then the pass was just that right thing against the way he was playing it. And
yeah.
If he had looked back, though, he probably could have stopped a touchdown. At least.
He needed to get that head around.
And he did not turn around.
Well, then it was exacerbated by more bad angles and tackling by Will Harris.
Will Harris really blew that.
But you notice at the reaction, Aubrey Pleasant yelled at him, reamed him out for the rushing touchdown earlier in the game, and then like gave him like a head bump for the long pass touchdown, because it was like just the running touchdown he gave up was a mental breakdown, and then the passing touchdown was more of like just an effort, and it was just kind of a unfortunate way it broke. You know what I mean, like he wasn't reaming him out for that one, but he was reaming him out for the other one because it was just an effort play and it just didn't work out his way.
Yeah. Hey, didn't you guys feel better about this loss though than like when Patricia had his first loss? We gave up all those points. It just feels different now.
It does.
The Jets loss with Patricia was bizarre, because remember they got that pick six on the first play?
Yeah.
And then fell apart. It's so weird.
And they took inherited a decent team, and then they went backwards. That was a problem. Mm.
I for like that third quarter, I was feeling pretty like, I wasn't like totally down, but I was not feeling great. But like, honestly, at the end of the game, even though we lost, I felt this swelling in my chest. I felt somehow good about just the game in general, even though we lost it, because you know what? It was a promise kept. That fourth quarter was the biting off the kneecaps that Dan Campbell promised from this team, that, you know, we'll get knocked down, we'll get hit in the face and knocked down on our way back up. We're going to bite off kneecap, you know, like eventually we'll be the last one standing. And this was in this game, you know, we weren't the last one standing yet, but we came back and bit off a kneecap before that game was over.
Yeah, absolutely. And you definitely like to see that, especially after what happened last year. This team was given up in a lot of games, the Panthers game, the Buccaneers on Christmas. Mm-hmm. The list goes on, especially in the second half of the season. Yeah. So seeing that, definitely encouraging. Before we move on to the offense and just about that fourth quarter, did you guys think it was odd that Julian Aquara and Levi Wunzirike did not suit up for this game?
Healthy
scratches. Very bizarre.
Wait, was Anurike a healthy scratch? I know Aquara and Jamar Jefferson were.
Yeah.
So
Anurike was too.
God, I wanted
to see Anurike. We could have used him. He wasn't on any injury report. So.
Were there any questions about that in the presser? Because I don't remember seeing anything. An explanation for that, at least.
Yeah, I don't know. No, I didn't see anything either.
I'm guessing it was I don't know about the Anurike one, but I'm guessing Aquara was because his weakness so far has been his run defense, and we knew this game was going to have a heavy run attack from the 49ers. And then Jamar Jefferson, I'm guessing that just the way they wanted the personnel set up, they were going to be okay with Swift and Williams going in, and then they could pull Igwebuke from special teams if they really needed a third back. I think it was a strategy for those guys, but I really don't understand why Anzarike didn't get, you know, tapped for this one. We could have used his disruption.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. It'll be interesting to see what happens going forward in regards to that. Okoro was used so much in the preseason. I thought they were really trending to using him, you know, putting him in a position where he could excel, especially on passing down. So I don't, yeah. But they didn't get too many of those third logs in this game, unfortunately.
No,
until that late.
That was honestly the biggest problem on defense. I'd say the passing defense fell apart mostly because the run defense fell apart so badly that it was so hard to really ever generate a real pass rush because you never knew what was coming because they were running at will on us early on.
Yeah, it's a well-run offense. A lot of people think San Francisco is one of the better teams in the entire league. They showed that to a large degree in this game. We fought back.
It's impressive how they make Jimmy G look good because he's a bad quarterback, in my opinion.
Yeah, they did make him look good.
I don't think he's as bad as you say he is necessarily.
I mean, they drafted Trey Lance, so they must not believe in him too much either.
He's a solid game manager. I don't think he has a whole lot of upside, but he's not I don't think he's a terrible quarterback.
Yeah, you can win a Super Bowl with him at quarterback, I guess. And speaking of quarterbacks, let's switch over to the offensive side of the ball, where Jared Goff made his debut for the Lions in this one. And it was
mixed.
Interesting. Yeah. Jared Goff didn't throw a pass over 20 yards, I think, until the fourth quarter in this game. He averaged 4.6 yards an attempt through three quarters. This is part of, I don't know if this was the game plan or what, but part of the issues that Sean McVay had with Goff in St. Louis or LA is that Goff would not want to force the ball downfield. He'd take the safe pass. He'd do the underneath route. He wouldn't take the risky throw usually. And that was one of the reasons Sean McVay got really frustrated with him at quarterback. And again, I don't know if this was the game plan or it was Goff, but it was a little frustrating to see these dink and dunk plays constantly. And then in the fourth quarter, he throws it deep down the field. And wow, our receivers can make plays. It's a miracle what happens when you give them a chance, but you got to give them a chance.
Well, they were dropping some before. So
there was a point in the third quarter where he had only completed two passes to wide receivers or something.
Yeah, the running back tight end said more.
Which
yards.
Was insane to me. It's like the polar opposite of a Stafford offense. Like the run game is going, a lot of short passes instead of long passes and no run game. It's fascinating to watch.
It like more than quadrupled by the end of the game then after the think whoever shared the tweet in the it was a Bob or Connor, one of you shared the tweet with that stat, the two receptions, and I saw it like a little while later and I went to look at the stat sheet and they'd already had like 10 more passes to receivers. Like it shot up big time in that fourth quarter.
Well, I got a theory on that on Goff though. I think he tries to find something downfield, but he takes too long. And when he does decide to hit his short receivers, he waits too long. They're getting hit right as they're catching the ball. You know, if you compare it to someone like Brady, he throws a lot of short passes too, but he makes real quick decisions and he gets the ball to the guy. And they can usually run for a few more yards after the catch. Our guys were getting pummeled right as they were catching the ball.
And a great example of that is the Tyrell Williams play where he got hit in the head. If he's a little quicker on that throw, Tyrell Williams might be running for 20 yards instead of getting his head banged in. And now he's out probably for a few weeks here with a concussion.
The hope there is that, you know, he's in a whole new offense and, you know, he's going to have to learn to process what he's seeing downfield a little faster. And hopefully that's largely because he's still pretty fresh to this offense and that'll speed up as the season goes on.
Yeah. That one pick six though was inexcusable.
That
throw.
That was
Dan
horrible.
Campbell said as much.
And that changed the tide of the game.
I was watching that develop and there was like nothing there. I'm like, and then he threw it there. Cause I was watching Hawks. I was hoping they get it to him, but I was like, oh, he's covered. And then he forces it in there. I'm like, what the hell are you doing?
I mean,
that was like,
he got his hand.
He got hit as he threw. Yeah.
But, even if he was throwing it to his intended target, there was two guys there.
Yeah,
the only way he might have had that throw is if he was going over the top of those. Like, I don't know if like maybe if he wasn't getting hit, he was lofting that ball over the three guys. I don't know. Yeah, it did not look good either. We'll never know exactly what it looked like if he didn't get hit, but it didn't look good at all.
It was mixed with Goff, but it
wasn't all bad.
I do like that, you know, he's a veteran. He's been there, you know, and he kept his cool through the game. And I think the the players follow him, so that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a big positive. Yeah, big positive with Goff in this game is that him and Hockenson looked great together. We heard a lot about that connection in the offseason, and it looked great out there. Eight catches on 10 targets for Hockenson for 97 yards and a touchdown.
That's really good stats. Yeah.
Yeah. Goff's got real strong knees, too. You see that one play where he's getting bent over? Oh, it looked like his leg was going to snap like a toothpick.
And it, that looked really bad.
It just didn't. He was fine.
That was scary. Goff looked a lot better down the stretch. I think when he's more decisive, I think they need to like get him in some more hurry up situations or something, because on the hurry up down the stretch, when he's decisive and pushing the ball downfield, man, like you can see what he's capable of. I think he's like an onion, you know, like an ogre. You got to peel back the layers and open them up so he can bloom and start, you know, feeling more confident pushing that ball downfield.
Yeah, and he's got a bunch of young receivers, you know, and nobody's really established. So hopefully one of these guys will step up.
Cephas looked like he should have been targeted more in that game down the stretch. Like he was stepping
up.
Tell
me you like Cephas. Is that what you're saying? You're a fan of his?
That catch in the end zone really was nice pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was.
And that one down the sideline that got waved off.
That was a great catch, though. I was so disappointed.
He must have barely stepped out of bounds because it didn't look like it on any of the replays.
He did step out. I saw it on the replay.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, he definitely did it. Yeah. But two referees saw it too. So,
damn.
Yeah, I figured he did, but it was bare. It must have been not very much because
I actually thought the catch of the game was Khalif Raymond at the
that
TR
was great.
There. That was spectacular.
Yeah,
he's a shifty little dude. And I thought Amon-Ra St. Brown looked really good in this game too.
Yeah, he should have had a touchdown there, but Goff kind of overthrew him. He was wide open on the left side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cephas had, there was another one where Goff missed Cephas down the right sideline where he toasted his dude on a, like nine route.
Are we going to do the Goff throw of the week, or is it because he's only throwing them 5 to 10 yards? We can't.
Well, it used to be the Raymond Hall 40 yard catch of the week, but,
Well, we did the stat.
That requires for throwing a 40 yard pass to have a segment like that. So TBD on that one.
How far was the Raymond ball? The long pass that had to be as long as pass the Raymond down
Khalif Raymond 25 yards.
Oh yeah, that's
the longest pass technically was DeAndre Swift was 43 yard screen pass.
Right, but not 43 yards to the air.
That was nice though, that screen pass to Swift.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
beauty.
Oh, he juked out that guy.
Was dirty.
Yeah, nice run there. That was good.
That's my Goff throw of the week.
Our running backs both looked really good in this.
Well, that's what I wanted to get to next was the Lions running game, 116 yards and 24 carries, 4.8 yards a carry. It looked really, really good in this game. A good push up front.
Yeah. A lot of rush by DeAndre Swift, which I love.
Yeah, 11 carries for 39. Jamal Williams, 9 for 54. So really solid two-headed.
Yeah, a couple of nice gashers for like almost 20 yards. Like two, we had like three or four of those.
Hey, but I'm sensing a controversy coming up on this team, though. I hate to say it, but Penei Sewell is just absolutely awesome at left tackle. Man, he looked great to me.
Are you still worried, Z? Because you've been worried week to week about his performances. We're all like, he's fine.
He looked great. Telling you,
I mean, he still had a couple plays in this game that were not good. But
stop it,
yeah,
Z.
Really,
Jesus,
come on, really good.
Stop it, would you?
I'm not agreeing with Z by any means, but I'm not ready to call. I was giving
him props.
I also said I wasn't worried in the long term, but there would be some up and down play with him. I never
long term was one
with bashing him.
It's still short term.
I'm not
again,
ready.
You guys like to take a word I make and make a mound out of a molehill because in the preseason he looked bad. It was a matter of fact.
That's funny that you say we make the mountain out of the molehill when that's exactly what you did with this. But all that being said, it is
I was just assessing his play in the preseason. I was assessing his play in the preseason. Simple as that. And now I'm
overvaluing the preseason.
You're not even going to bring up that question until Decker comes back. So we can talk about this in 3 weeks.
It is going to be interesting because he did play a very respectable game. I'm not ready to anoint him the left tackle. If and when Decker gets healthy, because I'm not convinced Decker wouldn't have played a better game. You know, the guy's proved he can be one of the best in the league at that position. But, man, if he keeps playing like this, it might be a real controversy when Decker comes back. If he keeps up in his game.
What do you do with Decker, then?
You'd put him at right tackle.
Right tackle, yeah.
But I
it would be a funny circle of life because he did that to Reef when he came into the league.
Because I think the question is Sewell just that much better left tackle than right tackle? Because all my criticisms of him in the preseason were at right tackle, and then he switched over to left tackle with limited practice, and he looked
great.
That's
a fair question.
Because he was, I don't know. I mean, he was a left tackle his whole career. He never.
I know. I'm just saying that's where the question is more. Is he that much better left tackle than right tackle?
We won't have an answer for that for a long time, I think.
I know.
Obviously, so it's his natural position on the left. Doesn't mean he can't play right tackle. I mean, he's learning.
Right.
I would think he definitely goes back to right tackle when Decker comes back.
I would agree because Decker's done nothing to lose that job. He's still one of the better tackles in the league. So unless he just does something amazing in between now and then, I don't see him knocking Decker off without, you know, Decker coming back and making some mistakes.
Yeah. But it was a good game, I thought, at least from him. Frank Ragnow had an excellent game again. He was
glass and holes open.
He's a beast.
He's a beast. Jonah Jackson had an up and down game. Matt
Couple
Nelson,
rough
the right
plays
tackle,
for Jonah.
Proves that we have very limited. Matt Nelson was not very good in this game.
I thought he did respectable for what he is and the position he was put in. He gave up a couple of bad plays and. He wasn't great, but for a backup tackle who's a converted DN, I thought he played a respectable game. You know, not great, but a lot of the times he gave Goff time.
Yeah. And in one fairness to Goff in this game, there was a few drops in this game by wide receivers.
There was.
A little costly.
Swift had a bad one.
Kabinda.
Kabinda had a bad one.
Did St. Brown drop one? I can't remember. I thought he might have.
Yeah, I think he did.
There were slack, but
I mean, Goff missed a few too. He had some bad throws. It was, you know,
it is kind of curious. Like you're saying,
it was a tough outing. New team getting used to each other still.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to see. Oh yeah, we had three drops in this game: one by Williams, one by Swift, and one by Trinity Benson, and then one by Kabinda. Oh, so that'd be four drops.
Seems like they're using Swift in that kind of Alvin Kamara role, which is interesting. I'm curious to see if he keeps receiving.
Yeah,
seems to fit him well.
Oh yeah, he's a really good receiver. He's a really good receiver, especially when he's holding on to the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, still that Bears game at the beginning of the year last year.
Yeah, when he dropped the one in this game, I'm like, oh, he was due for his opening day.
Right, I thought the same exact thing when he dropped that.
And the Lions, the kicking game, Austin Siebert misses a 51-yard field goal, but then he makes a 49-yarder, so it's hard to assess completely. But just when he misses that 50-yard, little missed Matt Prater a little bit there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Their guy missed one too, so it's kind of a wash.
Well, yeah. Did you see his warm up? He slipped on the warm up.
That was funny.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
Go right in his butt. Yeah. That was awesome.
Oh, no.
On the turf, you never see that. Usually it's like maybe in the snow or something, but not a
indoor
perfectly good turf
stadium.
Hey, can I bring up a little thing? Connor and I were at the game, and, the atmosphere there was really good. I got to say the fans stepped up and I got lucky. I got to go out in the field and do the flag thing, that the giant flag they roll out for 9/11.
That's awesome.
That was really moving to be out there. And we're right on the field when the Lions were introduced. So you had that whole energy going. It was really exciting. The players were right next to us. It was kind of fun. It was really cool. When the national anthem came up, cause it's the whole 9/11 thing. It's like really getting misty eyed out there. It was really moving. And Connor had an experience at the game because you met who did you meet?
Oh yeah, I was in line to get in because we wanted to get in right away to see you guys, and Jeff Bakuda's grandpa was just right in front of us chilling in line, and he was like, I know everyone just says Akuda's nice as an act, but like I'm telling you, just not as his grandpa but as a person, he's just such a great guy. I think the Lions are going to be good this year, and I think Akuda is going to have a great season. Now, this is before Akuda's season-ending injury.
Making me more sad about it.
Yeah,
but he was, like, just so proud of his grandson, and I'm like, oh, that's
yeah, awesome. That's
nice. That is cool. Very cool.
Really cool.
That's cool.
Good thing you met him before the game and not after the game.
Yeah.
His grandpa's a great guy. He's really nice.
Yeah. But it's fun. It's always fun to go to opening day, you know, and just the whole energy downtown and everything. It was incredible.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, were there a lot of, could you hear a lot of people talking about Dan Campbell or anything like that? Or was there good energy just about the future of the team?
Yeah, people seem pretty positive about it. You know,
yeah.
I think because they know it's a rebuild, you know, they're people a little more forgiving of
retool.
Things going wrong.
No one was really expecting a win on Sunday, I think. So just the fact that they fought, I think, was satisfying to most of the fans at the stadium.
Hey, I was surprised by the amount of 49er fans there, though. I didn't think they traveled that well, but apparently they do.
They have a big fan base, the 49ers.
They're pretty loud.
Hey, speaking of Dan Campbell, what do you guys think about the fourth down attempts?
Love it.
I love it.
Oh, yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, love
me
it.
Too.
Yeah. Like, even though that first one was, like, kind of pathetic and Williams fell in the backfield.
Yeah, the execution was bad, but it was a good play.
I love the calls. Like,
I don't completely blame Williams on that one because Sewell got blown up by Bosa on that one a little bit.
He did.
So that caused kind of him to try to step out of the way. But, yeah, can't fall down either.
So I don't know if this is true because I saw this in a random – it was, like, on Pride of Detroit in a message board or whatever, a chat thread. And a guy said that under Patricia, we went for 51 times under his coaching regime, which I find really hard to believe. That's almost like once a game. And it seemed like he like rarely ever did it.
I don't know. Patricia wasn't that conservative on fourth down, I'd say. He
seemed pretty conservative in my memory, but you know, who knows? I try to black out most of his coaching career anyway. I mean, what do we do? Went for like 4-5 times in just one game. I mean, I love it. I love that aggression and that desire to not just settle for field goals.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Hey, you got to love the aggression. Yeah, 2-for-5 on fourth down in this game.
Yep. See, I have a quick question for you. Early in the game, you put out a text about Weatherberg. Maybe Patricia wasn't as big of a problem as Quinn.
I
wanted to throttle you through the phone.
I was so mad at the defense in the first half of this game.
Patricia was a disaster, whatever, however you spell it. But might have been an emotional.
I knew it was gonna stir some people the wrong way. I didn't care because I was so mad at what was going on in the first half. I mean, obviously, didn't truly mean it.
A little segue here and back to the defense. Right. Do you guys think you'd rather see Derek Barnes out there than Alex Anzalone after that first game?
I don't know. I need to go back and watch All 22. It usually doesn't come out for a day or two after the game. So I need to go back and look because I need to see why these holes are gaping on so many of the run plays. It was so easy. It just looked so easy. It looked like the 49ers are running like a practice out there in the first half for most of the time.
Yeah.
It's hard to say who to blame without looking. It sucks too. Like the 49ers gave us the ball in the first play of the game or on their end of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get an onside kick, which is super rare in today's NFL. Great kick. Just perfect bounce. And then the third turn. So we won a turnover battle, which statistically means you should win the game. But
that did help keep us in it though. Yeah,
it did.
It did help keep us in it. It definitely did. And broke a lot of. We were talking before this. The Lions, the spread was 9 by the time the game closed, and the Lions covered that with their crazy comeback here in the fourth quarter. Pissed off a lot of people in Vegas.
I love it. I just felt like Anzalone, the only time I noticed him on that field, he was getting like a guard up in his grill and driving him right out of the play or something. I really did not notice him make any positive impact in that game. And then Barnes comes in the fourth quarter and makes some nice run stuffs. So I was just curious if you guys thought maybe it's time to start shifting those reps.
A little early to You're right. What's going on? But I'm sure the coaches will have something to say on that this week.
I just want to see Barnes. That guy's so like.
I do too.
I think we all do. Is there anything else you want to cover before we wrap it up here?
I just want to say that there is hope for the future, and that's the biggest takeaway. Is that
better after
this game than before?
Yep. Talk about what that fourth quarter did in terms of the vibe going into week two of the season here.
I mean, if that game ended 41-10, I would be really depressed. But now I'm sort of flirting with looking at Monday night tickets. Maybe, probably not. But
yeah. And then Sunday night, we got to see what we gave up when Stafford had his best game ever with the Rams on Sunday night football.
Yeah. But
that doesn't surprise really me. Good. I'm still glad the trade.
Just remember, that was Stafford's fault. He didn't have to leave.
However, are they?
Just facts.
But the one play in this game that I had no idea what they were thinking. There's 20 seconds left. It's third down and 10 from the 20-yard line. We're down 8. And we throw a 5-yard out to Hockenson that wouldn't even have gone out of bounds. I was very confused. Is anyone else confused by that play?
Absolutely.
Great. If he catches it, okay. The clock keeps running. The clock's running. You get one more snap at the end zone. I was just very confused by that play call. I had no idea. Because up to that point, it was actually a lot of good play calls to get us in to the red zone there.
Same with the fourth down play. Confusing. Like, he should have just tossed that ball up to the end zone, regardless of who he saw or thought any where people were. Like, it was a fourth and long, right, and you had pretty much one shot left of this game, and he doesn't even throw it to the sticks, if I remember correctly. So, I mean, yeah, it kind of fell apart right at the wheels came off right at the very end there on those last few plays. And
yeah, there's like 20 seconds left. You could have theoretically got another playoff, but yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
He should have gone for the end zone.
It could have been a little better, but you know, at that point, I don't know why. I just felt like a swelling in my chest because like it felt like at least, you know, Campbell's promise was true about their fight in this team. And that's what really I take away from this game is that this team's got some fight in it. And that's all I really care about. It's a weird moral victory. And I'm glad that Campbell, did anyone watch Campbell's like presser after? He did not, you know, he wasn't sitting on some moral victory. Like, yeah, driven Detroit. Driven by Detroit. But no, Campbell was not resting on some moral victory. At the end of that game, you could tell he wanted that win, and he's not happy with where they're at, and they're gonna keep fighting at practice to get better, and he wants to win now. He's not thinking in terms of a rebuild.
True.
Amen, brother.
I'm excited for week two.
Me too.
Just because Aaron Rodgers played so badly and we were trending up at the end, I don't know. We'll talk about that later.
Even bigger for next week.
Yeah.
10.5, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The Lions, are 10.5 point underdogs on Monday Night Football next week, going into Green Bay, a Green Bay team that looks worse than the Lions after week one, actually. So that's encouraging. Maybe we're catching them on a bad week, hopefully. And this is Dan Campbell's first coaching visit into Lambeau. So he is undefeated right now going into there. So let's keep it that way.
He'll be good on Monday Night Football. I'm sure they're going to focus on him and show us some stuff.
I'm sure. ESPN has those like weird graphics that they do on Monday Night Football. I hope they have a good one for Dan Campbell. I think they can make something good out for that one.
bizarre.
I want to see like an animated like kneecaps getting bitten off.
Yeah, that'd be great. A little blood gushing and everything.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen, I think that's going to wrap it up for us here. Lions, 41-33, lose in week one, but they have Green Bay in week two, and they are still tied for first. The whole division loses. The Bears get crushed by the Rams. The Vikings lose in overtime to the Bengals. So, and as we mentioned, Green Bay loses 38-3 in Jacksonville to the Saints. So, gentlemen, we'll wrap it up here. Instagram, Drinking the Blue Kool-Aid, Twitter, at Drinking Lions, please. Follow us on those social media pages. We'd really appreciate it. And engage with us. And what do you think about the Lions week one? And then subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. That's Drinking the Blue Kool-Aid, a Detroit Lions podcast. And please leave a review. We'd really appreciate it. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you to our producer, Kid J, as well. He continues to crush it for us every week and every episode. So thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back later this week, previewing week two, Monday Night Football. And last but not least, gentlemen, as always, go!
Down the field, a charging team that will not yield. And when the blue and silver wave, stand and cheer the brave. Rock, 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 go hard, win the game. With honor you will keep your fame. Down the field and gain, a Lions victory.